This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I have a guest I'm very, very excited to welcome to the show. I'm excited to have this conversation. Dr. Wilfred Riley is professor of political science at Kentucky State University, author of Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About. Professor, recently you talked about a requiem for Black Lives Matter. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Glad to be on.
I noticed right now that you did some extensive research on Black Lives Matter as an organization and what the overall effect was. Was it a positive effect? Was it a negative effect? And you found some very interesting things. So tell us about your research.
Yeah, so myself and a guy named Bob Maranto at the University of Arkansas, another guy named Pat Wolf, actually wrote a professional academic paper where we looked at kind of the aftermath of the Black Lives Matter movement. And a couple of publications, Spiked UK, which I write for pretty regularly, Commentary, so on, asked me to kind of talk about the short version of what we found in their pages. And basically, the piece is titled A Requiem for Black Lives Matter. And what I found was that Black Lives Matter didn't accomplish much of anything for ordinary Black Americans, much less Americans of other colors. I mean, I'm a writer on kind of the political right, and I wasn't too surprised by that. But again, the data just is what it is. And I think a lot of people were a little stunned. The piece got a fair amount of attention. But just at the most basic level, if you look at police shootings, which was BLM's whole thing, between 2015 and 2021, you find that the things they suggested, like pulling back the cops in the most dangerous areas in less crime surge, and if it did, sending them back in, those didn't reduce police violence at all. So, I mean, last year, if I have this correct, you had 1,051 fatal police shootings. That includes unarmed men, Black people, so on down the line. When BLM began in 2014, you only had about 900 similar shootings. There's never been, this is another big element of this, there's never been a big problem with the police just gunning down unarmed, innocent people in the USA. There are about 60 million police interactions every year. So on that front, I mean, the Black number, unarmed Black men, is down by like 3. But I mean, there hasn't been a substantial change at all. And on the other hand, what we've seen is a big surge in crime. So, I mean, murders, again, when BLM started 2014, you're looking at about 14,164 murders per year. Right now, I mean, the past 2 years, we've had more than 20,000, more than 21,000 murders. So we're getting back to these sort of crack era levels of violence because we've taken money from the police, we've taken good cops off the street, so on down the line.
Yeah, no, this is amazing. You say the post-BLM picture of America and the trends in street crime is quite simple. Serious crime has skyrocketed in recent years. The most reliable annual crime data are the homicide figures. And as you found out, including Jason Johnson, police researcher and president of the Law Enforcement Legal Defense Fund, has found out that the United States tallied more than 20,000 murders in 2020, highest total since 1995, and 4,000 more than 2019. I mean, I'm broadcasting right here in Philadelphia, Dr. Riley. We just surpassed 1,000 carjackings, over 400 homicides. We had a shooting the other day, a terrible tragedy at a school where some guys in SUVs came over and gunned down some of the football players, which I'm sure was gang-related shootings. It's happening in every city in America right now, and it's also spreading into the suburbs as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have forgotten, because we haven't seen this for 15, 20 years, what crime looks like if you don't let the police do their job in these concentrated big cities. I mean, America's second or third largest country in the world after China and India. So, I mean, places like New York City used to see 2,000 to 3,000 homicides in a year. And, I mean, I remember when I was in high school, a guy on the football team whose name was Lee Ambrose just had to put the name Lee on his jersey because the Ambrose are a well-known Chicago street gang. And at this point, like 94, 95, 96, we thought he would get shot if he went to games with his full name on. This is what you were actually seeing when you mentioned the football situation for many, many years. I mean, most of us probably remember the trains, the buildings covered in graffiti. And in the late 90s, there actually was an approach. It's called broken windows policing that targeted this, where the idea was by any means necessary, we're going to stop all this crime. So we saw a lot of crimes. Murder, again, dropped from 25 plus per year down to 14,000 in the modern era. We saw crime cut by about half. And the simple reality, putting aside some of the wordy academic nonsense, is that if we kind of to protect black Americans or whatever the idea is, cut police budgets by a third and cut police stops by half, we're basically going to see the same type of crime we used to in, you know, the New Jack City era, the That One Movie Kids era. So hopefully we won't do that. I think social media might play a role here. Like when you see mobs looting, you know, entire convenience stores and so on in real time, it's harder for maybe more left-leaning voices at the local paper to say, well, no, there's nothing like that going on. So I don't think we're going to go all the way back, but definitely during the George Floyd era, we didn't see a reduction in crime or an improvement in race relations, to put it politely.
And you have no problem calling out the fact that these policies endorsed by groups like Black Lives Matter. I mean, I got a 7-minute clip of Democrats saying defund the police. They're all trying to walk this back. They're all trying to say, oh, they never met it. They never meant it. They never said it. But they're also doing stupid things. Like in Philadelphia, for example, cops can no longer stop somebody if their license plate is covered up. So there's all these little traffic kind of issues that police can no longer stop a motorist for. And you point out in your research that when you have cops no longer allowed to actually even pull over cars and things like this, you're going to have higher rates of crime. When you get rid of the policies that enable the police to be able to actually find the people who are committing the crimes, then there's something else, too. And that's the prosecution aspect of this. We got this district attorney here in Philly. This guy's a total Marxist. I mean, he really does believe the criminals are the victims. And so they'll get arrested for having illegal guns, but they'll be back on the streets the next day. Prosecutions for illegal guns are way down in the city of Philadelphia. So that's the other thing. You've got the one problem of saying defund the police, and the other in saying that we need to have progressive policies by district attorneys that essentially make jail a revolving door.
Yeah, that's a good point. The two go together. I think it's a Krasner you guys have out there in Philly.
Larry Krasner, yep.
Yep, the OG. I mean, he's known around the country negatively in my field of research. You know, I'm from Chicago and live in Louisville, so we have very, very similar issues. And again, a lot of these district attorneys are, I mean, elected by majority vote at the local level. So I don't think this will become like the 70s where this goes on for a period of years, if not decades, but it's definitely going on right now. And one point you made there when you said, look, it was the left wing of the two political parties that was talking about defunding the police, and that's a real thing they said. You are seeing a lot of this 360-degree triple axle kind of BS that politicians like to do right now. But yeah, the New York Times ran an editorial called "Yes, We Mean Literally Defund the Police." You know, I printed all this stuff out and have it in my office because nowadays even the words on websites can change and so on. But yes, that's absolutely something. It was a mainstream position on the political left. I mean, the city of Minneapolis said they were going to get rid of their entire police department and reconstitute it as, I think the name was the Social Work and Public Safety Force. You know, all the Democratic members of Congress put on Ghanaian-style kente cloth and knelt in front of a picture of George Floyd in prayer. Like, these are real things that happened, and they are the things that caused what you're seeing now. So don't be gaslit. I mean, the Republicans have their problems, too. But just like it's fair to blame the GOP on a health care situation, it's absolutely fair to say that the people who said they were going to defund the police and then did are the people that are responsible for crime. And Krasner he's one of many examples of that. You know, the Soros-funded, but more specifically, like NGO and general-funded prosecutors around the country. One final quick line there. One thing you said when you described Krasner as a Marxist is interesting, because the whole idea of Marxism and of all the wokeness that's downstream from that is that if you are failing, by definition, that's proof someone else is at fault. Because, you know, all people and groups are exactly equal, blank slate, all that. So to someone like Krasner, if someone is a criminal, that means someone else out there is a racist. And the real goal is to go lock up the racist, not the criminal. And I think that's BS. I mean, rich people have a very high level of crime, honestly, if you look at drugs and so on. So some people are just bad and enjoy partying, and you need a place for those people to go.
Yeah, it sounds like a good time.
Well, I mean, I was a fairly bad person who enjoyed partying when I was a young man. But if I got in a brawl or I got caught with a bag or something, I mean, my understanding from a working class neighborhood in Chicago is very much like the cops are going to kind of roughly put you in the car. You're going to go downtown. You're not going to like explain that to your dad, your mom. That's the incentive to not do that. If you remove the incentive, do people like to fight and hook up in public? Yes. But a city cannot allow that. And I mean, when you look, and I'm having fun, we're bantering, but when you look at like Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, and these are very diverse cities, by the way, not the stereotypical slum communities. But I mean, you see literal Hoovervilles of people sleeping on the streets, like just mugging business women at random and so on. That's no exaggeration. And as a leader, you sort of can't allow that. You can be as sympathetic as possible to people with drug issues, but the idea of allowing a tent city across from your courthouse can't be one of your options in terms of how to handle that.
2 points I want to make what you just said. Number one, I don't think it's ever okay for anybody to ever hook up in public. We don't need public displays of affection. So that's number one. Not necessarily we need prosecutions over it, but let's just as human decency. Dr. Riley, just human decency, all right? Nobody needs to see that.
Well, sure, get ideally, yeah, we should be. Okay.
Number two, and this is the other point I wanted to mention. There's a political liability with all this, is there not? Because I'm seeing right now, for example, John Fetterman, who's running for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania, who's been very much about releasing criminals from prison. He's removed the Black Lives Matter section from his campaign website. And, you know, James Carville came out and said the stupidest words ever uttered in the English language were defund the police. So I have to think, as a lot of these victims, as you point out in your research, are black. You know, a lot of the victims of the violence in these cities are black and brown people. I got to think now that it's become a major political liability for Democrats to embrace these various groups.
Yes, and this is also a major problem for race relations. So, I mean, the actual data on this is pretty astonishing. Like, when I was a kid, I mentioned where I'm from, and crime had no racial association. There were fairly high crime rates for Italian Americans, Black Americans, Irish Americans, Mexican Americans. You know, not to single those four groups out, but all were well represented in the blotter. Now, that's not really the case because of the de-emphasis on policing and specifically urban areas with big black populations. So, I mean, in the modern era, the black percentage of murder victims has gone from about 25% to about 65%. Like, as of last year, 60% of the people that were killed in gangland murders and other murders, domestic murders may not be on that list, but were black, happened to be black. Well over 50% of all murder victims were black. So I think, one, that hurts race relations, where the idea becomes perhaps a heavily black city like Memphis or Detroit simply is not safe, however beautiful and pleasant it might be. But also, at the most basic level, if you call your movement Black Lives Matter, and the effect of your movement is that 10,000 black people are mowed down by gunfire every year, to put that in context, I mean, there were about 5,000 people lynched in the USA all time, and more than a third of them were white. So if you're seeing these incredible murder tolls, it's a lot of people are going to start noticing that, I think. So, yeah, the letters BLM may well be kind of untouchable in a couple of years from a political standpoint. And I think what you're going to see with these Democrats is, again, sort of an interesting dance where people, the whole thing will be forgotten, kind of. We're starting to see this in the big cities with COVID lockdowns. People will say things like, well, no one ever supported that. And it'll become kind of an awkward archaeological, you know, technique to ask the question of, well, how did it happen then for 4 years?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. They'll all start saying, yeah, we wanted our kids in school, too. We didn't want the school shut down. They're already trying to play that game as well. Dr. Riley, this was excellent. I really appreciate your time today. Dr. Wilfred Riley, professor of political science at Kentucky State University and author of Taboo, 10 Facts You Can't Talk About. I'm going to post a link to A Requiem for Black Lives Matter. What an excellent piece and an excellent interview. I really appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Sounds good. Hope to talk again. Bye.
And I want to tell you about my friends at USA Insulation, because I know the last thing you want to think about is winter, but this weather stinks today. I mean, this whole weekend stinks. And it's freezing out right now. I don't know what's going on. I wish I had one of John Fetterman's hoodies, because I'm freezing. I would never want to touch one of his hoodies. Can you imagine how gross those things are? But I'm cold is my point. So you know it's going to be a very, very cold winter. And I just saw that in New Jersey, for example. Electricity rates, they just approved an increase of 25%. So now is the time to get your home ready with USA Insulation. When most people think of their insulation, you might think of your attic, but attic insulation alone is not enough to combat a very, very tough winter. It's like going out to shovel snow. You just got a hat on, no coat. You need USA premium foam insulation in your walls. It's what we did in our home. They install the insulation neatly from the outside. It gets into places that other insulations can't. The cold air stays out, the warm air stays in, and your furnace runs less, which helps tremendously against these rising energy costs. Now, speaking of energy costs, you can get insulated right now, get energy savings right now, and you don't have to make a payment for 2 years, and that's interest-free. So winterproof your home now with USA Insulation. Get insulated now, and you don't have to make a payment for 2 years. 1-800-USA-FOAM. That's 1-800-USA-FOAM or usainsulation.net.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.